The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. The magic of the FA Cup lives. Forest put out the holders and Coventry fans put Mark Hughes out of a job. But the magic is also gone. Seven goalless draws and weakened teams as many of the top players enjoy a week off. Elsewhere, is Philip Coutinho the new Iniesta? How comfortable will Ross Barkley find the Chelsea bench? And just how much pizza is a year's supply? We'll round up Europe as Costa scores and sees red. Get your questions, do Feedback Corner. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. I had a message from David who says, I'm deeply concerned about Barry. Has anyone even checked whether he made it home after that Christmas Eve pod? For all we know, he could be laying stripped to the waist, face down in a pool of his own vomit in a lay-by just off the A4. Barry, you're here.
I am.
Okay.
And yes, that was a Scandinavian hooch somewhat blindsided me, but I've made a full recovery.
At the start of the pod, you were sober, weren't you?
Yes.
At the end of the pod?
Not so much. And that was just two thimblefuls of some treacly Benelin-type drink I'd never seen before and never want to see again.
Sean Ingle, welcome back.
Hello.
How long since your last pod?
I think we're looking about 18 months, I guess.
Wow. You've been doing real journalism in the world of murky sports.
Indeed, doping, corruption, all that sort of thing.
Where would you put football on the murkiness chart?
I think there's a lot to come out. It's whether we can find it.
Okay. But, like, it's not the murkiest.
No, but okay. I mean, we look at cycling, we look at athletics, but I think we'd be very naive to think that if people are doing stuff they shouldn't be doing in those minor sports, it isn't going on in football as well.
Okay. Jacob Steinberg, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Can you recreate, I'm well, thanks. Can you recreate your reaction when Aubameyang scored that goal at Wembley?
It was kind of, oh God, now I've got to rewrite my sidebar.
Oh, it was one of those.
Yep.
Oh, you weren't happy about it.
No, because we were having to file 20 minutes before the end of the game. And that happened 20 minutes before the end of the game.
So do you reckon you were the West Ham fan most annoyed by Aubameyang's goal?
Yeah, same as Carroll's goal in the 94th minute on two nights before.
So maybe you should not work on West Ham games.
Maybe, yeah.
Okay. Can we help you with that?
But you're not the football editor. So.
Hey, from small acorns I could be. What do they have to do, Barry?
You wouldn't like it.
Why
it's
not?
A lot of very hard work.
Oh, is it really?
Massaging egos. I don't think you'd be very good at
that.
Are
you good with spreadsheets? Do you know how to do a spreadsheet?
No. Okay. I've got one for my football team, but someone else made it. And when it needs editing, I have to email Greg, and say, who's left the team about 3 years ago. Could you just add him to the spreadsheet?
No, I don't think football editing is the job for you. Then.
Okay. But, you know, it's nice to dream, isn't it? Should we start then with the Arsenal? The holders are out. They'd won the FA Cup 3 times out of 4, but not again. Nottingham Forest 4, Arsenal 2. Barry, did you enjoy this game? I thought it was a good, fun game of football.
I thought it was absolutely terrific. It had everything. It's kind of always difficult with games like this. You know, we tend to dwell on Arsenal's shortcomings, and there were many to dwell on, but you also want to give Forest credit for a great performance. They clearly wanted it more than a largely second-string Arsenal side, and I think Arsene Wenger made a big boo-boo, who was kind of arrogant of him to not... I don't mind him putting out a second-string team, but have the big guns on the bench in case you need them, and he didn't even have that. So, you know, I would have no sympathy for them whatsoever. I really enjoyed Eric Leechai's 2 goals. I actually think there's a case to be made that the first one was even better than the second. Both terrific goals, I mean, but just that... The thought that went into it, and that bullet header from a yard out, getting in front of the keeper was difficult. He pulled it off perfectly. So, but yeah, just a terrific game, and hats off to Forest, whose fans haven't had a great deal to cheer about in recent years.
Eric Leechai's wife said if he got a hat-trick, he would have been allowed to have a dog. So he wanted the penalty, but he only got 2.
Funnily enough, yes. when he said that after the game, he was being interviewed on live TV, and he went, my wife said this year if I get a hat-trick, she'll give me a... And I'm going, what the hell is he going to say next? But, yeah, it was a dog. But, yeah, I think a nation was holding its breath. What has she promised?
We don't all think like you, Barry. Sean, arrogant of Arsene Wenger then?
Well, I mean, they've got the Carabao Cup coming up in 2 or 3 days. I mean, they've got to make some changes. But I thought the defence in particular was slapstick. But fair play to Forest. They went for it. And I mean, I made this piece in my column today. Too often in the Premier League this season, it's been attack against defence. And I think we saw it with other games as well, you know, Coventry, Stoke, we saw even with Luton, Newcastle, and particularly with Forest, they went for the bigger name team, and I think they thoroughly deserved their victory.
Brereton up front looked great, didn't he? Gave Rob Holding a tough time, and Per Mertesacker, Jacob, I mean, he doesn't play very often, it's sort of once or twice a year, but I wonder if he, like I also did this weekend, is looking in the mirror thinking, maybe I should never play football ever again.
Well, he's not going to be playing football ever again in about 4 months' time, so there we go. But with that Arsenal team, you do look at some of them and wonder how some of them are still at Arsenal. Sometimes comes a surprise when it comes to these cup games and you see Debussy in the Arsenal team. So I thought he left about a year ago. And probably now the same applies to Theo Walcott, who signed his big contract, it's 5 years ago now, and made that big fuss about it when he scored the day after or so, that he got $100,000 or whatever it was at the time. Since then, hasn't really progressed. Other teams would have looked at him at the time and thought, was he worth taking? And he just seems to have stagnated at Arsenal. He's now getting on, you know, he's not as young as he was when he got into
that England team. Is he over 18 now?
He's over 18 at this point. It's not Theo Walcott's World Cup diary anymore. And he's playing against Nottingham Forest in the FA Cup third round and not really doing that much, having not made much of a stir in the Premier League or got off even on the bench when Arsenal were chasing a goal against West Brom the week before.
I mean, I do think this is one of the problems with latter period Wenger. You know, back in the day, he was quite ruthless. You know, Overmars, Petit, Vieira, Henri all went close to their peak or maybe slightly on the slide. You know, he should have got rid of Sanchez in the summer when City were offering a lot of money, given the problems in the squad. And as Jacob says, there are several players there. You just think, well, what's the point? I mean, he got rid of Christopher Ray and people like that back in the day fairly quickly. But these guys just continue to hang around.
During the course of my extensive research for my forthcoming Serie A corner, I realised, I hadn't heard this before, it might be common knowledge, but there's a lot of interest from Italy in Theo Walcott, and he apparently wants to go. So Juve were interested, but their interest is cooled. And I think it was Milan. Milan were interested. Their interest is cooled. They don't want any more players in his position. But Roma and Inter are also believed.
He just looked totally lost, didn't he? And I sort of thought, I felt for him around the 60th minute when he realised he hadn't done anything. And then people would be saying he hasn't done anything, even against Forest. And that made him do even less. And there was one time when he was put through, wasn't he? And he sort of cut back. And you thought, World Cup diaries, Theo Walcott would have carried on.
He's such a confidence player. He always has been. And there have been little flashes here and there where you've thought that he'd found his position. And it's not as a right forward. It was when he was playing in the 2015 FA Cup final up front. He played through the middle. And there have been a couple of moments as well where he did that against Manchester United when they thrashed them 3-0 under Van Gaal. He played up front and his pace was enabling Sanchez and Ozil to get all that space. Probably after that, he got an injury, which he tends to get. And it just, he's not without talent. So I can understand why there would be Serie A teams or top teams of that ilk looking at him. But I think they might, when they get him, end up being a little bit frustrated, as Arsenal fans are with him now.
Matt Gooner says, should Steve Bold be bought some white face paint and white gloves since Wenger removed his vocal cords?
I don't get that.
Well, because he just sits there and doesn't do anything. Oh, he doesn't say anything. You wondered if this would be the making of Steve Bold, that he would sort of come out like Mark Strong, who I really want to play him in Arsene Wenger the movie. But he didn't seem to be doing any shouting anyway.
I don't know if there's a whole lot he could have done. I mean, just Arsenal, half of them didn't really look as if they wanted to be there.
They did care when the second penalty, the lad kicked it with both his feet.
Yeah,
and Robbie Savage and who else was commented couldn't notice every time he kicked it with two feet. And they went, I can't see that. And you see how the ball spins. You're going, anybody who's kicked a football or seen a football kicked knows that he's kicked it with both his feet. It was tough for the referee, Sean, do you think?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, but you know, maybe with VAR we can solve all that. But that's probably not an issue we want to get into today. But yeah.
Oh well, it's happening tonight, VAR, isn't it, in Brighton Palace? So we can get into it. If you want, right
well,
now.
Well, I mean, that would be an obvious example. We all saw it very quickly. Someone in the stands quickly say, hang on a second, that, you know, he's kicked it twice, end of story.
It's not actually in the stand. I was at the Mike Riley's VAR demonstration on Friday night.
Sounds like a really great DVD.
Well, I don't want to go into the depths of whatever that might mean, but it's going to be something. It has to be at a Premier League ground, so that's why it's not being used in the Manchester City v Bristol City tie, because it's based at Premier League production studios, which is where Neil Swarbrick will be tonight in what is known as the video operations room, and that's where there'll all be these VAR refs, and so it has to be at a Premier League ground because it all gets beamed back to there, and those guys will have a direct link through to the on-field referee. And so yeah, double kick, encroachment and stuff like that, penalties would be, it's quite easy to sort that out.
Am I right in thinking the ref can't call on the VAR?
No, he can't say.
He just runs around and then suddenly gets a buzz in his ear going, we're watching something from a minute ago, but carry on reffing the game.
He can't say, can you check that out for me? So they've been told to ref as normal. What's interesting that Riley was saying, which you imagine could be an issue at the start, is they're going to have to relearn their skills. They're going to have to maybe, they'll see a flag go up from the linesman, but think maybe I'll hang on and let the play continue and see what happens, because there is the backup of the VAR. One of the interesting little details that came out is that they'll make the square signal with their hands like they do in cricket to say that we're going to the VAR. So that's what the referee will do. But if a player does that in an aggressive way, as if he's calling for a booking, he will get booked.
Can you tell me the difference between doing it in a non-aggressive?
Well, it's
how aggressively can you do a square?
It's like if a player was to sort of say, is that a yellow card? Is that a yellow card? Just as a question, then they wouldn't get booked. But if they start really aggressively calling for a booking, if you know how they do so, then they would. Similarly, there's also there's going to be a screen by the dugouts in between the dugouts, which is kind of going to be protected, so none of us are going to be able to see it. But if the managers or the subs try to look at what's happening and they try to influence it, the manager would get sent to the stands.
Okay.
So I can't see how this is going to end in anything other than total and utter comic farce and disaster.
You were doing the Big Fish Little Fish cardboard box dance, which is that would be a straight red, I think, if you went up to the ref and started doing that.
Well, I'd imagine, you know, if you're off your head enough on on pills to be doing that, you probably shouldn't be on a football pitch in the first place.
But the interesting thing about VAR surely is, and I know you don't think it's a good idea, but
it's a good idea. And it's not because I'm a dinosaur, but I never thought it was a good idea, because I think contentious decisions and wrong decisions are an integral part of the game, and they create debate. What I do find interesting is quite a few people of my acquaintance, many of them colleagues, who were wholeheartedly in favour of it, have changed their minds since it has been come into use in other places, and it's proved to be more of a hindrance, I think, than a help.
I mean, I was at the 2006 World Cup final reporting for The Guardian way back when, and when the first unofficial use of it happened, where Zidane obviously headbutted Materazzi. And there, I think, is a classic example where, of course, it should be used. It changed the game, and rightly so. You can't have someone headbutting someone in a World Cup final. I think Barry's right. There have been problems with implementation.
Such a prude, Sean.
Well, indeed. I'm not as old school as Barry is, clearly. But there are problems. Have been problems with implementation, but it doesn't mean that the concept, the idea is wrong. It's just you kind of work out when it should be used and perhaps change how you go about it.
The interesting thing about that is on the use of VAR, Materazzi might have got a booking for his part in it. Maybe if he'd actually got involved a bit more with Zidane, but there was the example of the Huddersfield v City game where a couple of weeks ago, where a Huddersfield player got sent off for pushing a Manchester City player in the face, but wasn't seen that a City player had done something first. And so if there's provocation, they can go back and do something to the player who maybe had instigated it to provoke the other player to do something worse.
Am I the only one who thinks sometimes the fourth official tells the ref, you know, something? Am I the only one that thinks that? When he's running along and chatting to his linesman for ages, the fourth official might say, actually, I think something's happened.
I don't know. It's possible.
I'm just saying.
Where I think it's... people are going to get really annoyed by it is that with yellow cards, you're not able to, say, take away a second booking if it's blatantly wrong. Also, you're not able to one of the points where they can award a second booking is for a dive that wins a penalty, but not a dive that wins a foul. Sorry, a free kick outside the area. So let's say Wilshere last week, he would have, if that was, if we're saying that was a dive against Chelsea, then he still wouldn't get a second booking.
Really?
Even if, let's say, the Arsenal player sticks the free kick into the top corner.
That's so interesting.
So, but they said we don't want to, well, for a start, it's not going to make the game 100% perfect. Secondly, we don't want to be looking at every single decision because our aim is not to ruin the game.
I'm with you now, Barry. It's going to be a disaster, and frankly, I can't wait. let's just praise Nottingham Forest, all of us. Gary Brazil, not the permanent manager, seemed like a nice fella. Scored a goal for Cambridge once that I remember him putting his fist up. He was standing in the goal going, yes. So I was pleased for him. What I find about the FA Cup is you see all these people you haven't seen in football for years, and obviously they're all 20 years older, like Mark Robbins. And you go, ah, people have aged. So look, well done, Nottingham Forest. And we'll move on from that game to the Merseyside derby. And we'll talk about Philip Coutinho and Ross Barkley. We'll do that in the company of our Merseyside correspondent, Andy Hunter. Andy, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, good. Thanks for coming on. Should we start off the pitch then? Philip Coutinho has gone. What's the sort of reaction been in Liverpool to that?
I think a sense of glad it's over, got a good deal out of it. Disappointment, obviously, that he's gone. A mix of emotions, I would say. I think there's a recognition that it's been another distraction that Liverpool could do without. And it's kind of cutting against everything that the team is doing this season and what Klopp's hoping to achieve, and he could kind of do without, I think, every transfer window being dominated by Coutinho and Barcelona. Just and I think, in a way, if you're exact, the best fee you can for him, for a player who doesn't want to be there, made it clear he didn't want to be there as well, then it's a good deal, but only a good deal if Liverpool spend the money properly, which they haven't really always done in the past. Luis Suarez being the more recent example. I'd say Suarez was the bigger loss as well to Liverpool than Coutinho, made worse by how Liverpool spent the Suarez money. So, you know, as long as you don't end up with a Balotelli and Ricky Lambert type replacement for Coutinho, then, you know, I do agree with what Klopp said in the statement, that Liverpool are in a stronger position to cope with this loss than they have been with previous ones. But as I say, it all depends on what they do with the money now.
Andy, Klopp had plenty of very nice things to say about Coutinho in his statement, but the statement issued by Liverpool seemed very cold. You know, they just matter of fact, and they refer to him as the player, second mention, rather than Philippe. Did that strike you as odd?
No.
Okay. But like, they've made a lot of money out of him. He has been a good servant.
Yeah, I think they let Klopp's statement do the gushing praise side of things and just kept it succinct to themselves. I don't know. I think Klopp said quite a lot in his statement, having not said anything on the subject for well over a month since, you know, I wrote yesterday that, you know, Coutinho tried to get everything rolling after the Spartak Moscow game on the 6th of December, and, you know, Klopp's been asked repeatedly since then about the situation, even asked on Friday night after the derby win at the, you know, what the latest was, was there any change, and he was straight back and that, saying there hadn't been any change. But at that time, as we now know, Coutinho was in London with his agent, and he would have been there with Liverpool's permission. So, you know, having said nothing, I think he was well aware of, he was well aware of everything that was going on, and probably already signed off the deal at that point.
Barry, do you not remember the statement we released in August when we referred to the world's strongest man host? And didn't do
the
it by
presenter.
Jacob, you have a question.
Andy, do you think there's anything, would Liverpool be trying to just make themselves feel better if they were to think that, as good as Coutinho can be, he's at times a little bit inconsistent and gets a lot of injuries?
I'd say he is. Not so much. I think he has been inconsistent in the past. I'd say over the last 12 months, 18 months, he's become, I think he's addressed that a lot. He's become a much more influential player in on a consistent level, take more responsibility for the team as well. I'd say he does does have a tendency not to show up in you know, key games when the opposition deliberately targets him. He does, you know, he still doesn't have a solution to that all the time. And, you know, that's something that Liverpool are going to have to cope with without him now, is the, you know, finding a solution to the amount of teams that do sit back and, you know, I'd say refuse to use the park the bus phrase, but they do at Anfield. Only, you know, Klopp's argument is only Manchester City this season haven't changed the way they play against Liverpool, and they're going to have to find a way around that now without the most one of the most creative players. But yeah, you know, he has been inconsistent in the past. I think he has improved an awful lot over the last 18 months, I would say, from being flashes of brilliance to just being a better all-round player who's, you know, the heart of the team as well. And I think one thing which we don't know is the impact it'll have on the dressing room. I think obviously Klopp's statement, which I was quite surprised about, him saying that Coutinho had told his teammates that he wanted to go, and I believe that was several months ago. So they've had a long time to get used to the idea, but now he has actually gone and they've seen that the club is prepared to sell one of its best players, then I'm sure that would have an impact as well inside the dressing room.
Have they spent half the money already on Van Dijk, or do they get this money as well? Will the bosses let them have 142 million to go and presumably buy a goalkeeper? And, well, Thomas, that's where they Lamar need to start. And, yeah, maybe Thomas Lamar.
Yeah, that's what they need. I think time will tell. I think we asked Klopp this as soon as Van Dijk was bought, and he was adamant that he's never been told he needs to balance the books, and that you know, the Van Dijk money was already accounted for. I think, you know, time will tell on that. They've already committed 55 million to getting Keita in the summer, and the suggestion is, you know, they'll try now to use some of the Coutinho money to try and bring that forward. But again, Klopp has been asked about the possibility of him coming in January, and he said that he didn't hold out much hope on Leipzig changing their position or letting him go now, especially with they're so close to qualifying for next season's Champions League too. So, you know, like Van Dijk and like Keita, he might be prepared to wait on that and use the money then. But I certainly agree that they do need to replace Coutinho and the goalkeeper. And I think if they use the money on both of those, then I think Liverpool could come out stronger for it.
I was on the wireless on Friday, Andy, and when the Ross Barkley deal went through, and a lot of Everton fans rung up and were very angry, including one who was like, he can go to London with his fancy friends. And it it was very entertaining. But what's the sort of mood been around the Barkley sale?
I think the mood is more the disappointment at the fee, and that they've obviously been stitched up, the club, in terms of, you know, they could have had 35 million in the summer, and now he's gone for 15. But then, in a sense, from the player and the agent's point of view, you know, he did rupture his hamstring at the end of the transfer window. So why not leave him at Everton and get Everton to pay his wages and pay for his rehab, and then, you know, he can obviously get a better deal in January. So I think the agent has done the right thing by his client. Strangely enough, I was asked by our football desk to prepare a piece for Barkley leaving in the summer, and I was I read it, obviously never got published, thankfully, and I read that back the other day, and I was quite critical of Barkley for not really progressing over the last few years. And, you know, he had the hardline approach of Koeman, which he didn't take kindly to, and it was at the root of him going, I think, basically. And he was indulged by Martinez, and he's not really, no, he hasn't lived up to his potential that, you know, that was there at the start. But I think for the fee, 50, I think that's what sticks in the claw with Everton. I think, as I was going to say, I was critical of Barkley in the summer, but then when you look at Everton have spent £70 million on transfer fees on Sigurdsson and Klaassen, plus their wages, plus the wages of Wayne Rooney, essentially to replace Barkley, and Everton have gone backwards. So I think, you know, that kind of puts Barkley in a better light, that maybe, you know, he wasn't as bad as perhaps I thought in the summer, or he had a, you know, or his replacements are just worse.
Andy, I saw a stat, I think it was in the Liverpool Echo this morning, Kevin Morales actually had more goals and assists for Everton than Barkley did, which was quite remarkable. Yeah, he's gone as well now. And during the derby the other night, a good game, Rooney was hooked and was not pleased. I think he was taken off before he was sent off. But
yeah, I agree.
He doesn't look too happy at Everton. He's done better than I thought he would, but he just doesn't look very happy to be there now at the moment.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, is that he's done better than I expected, certainly in terms of his goals output. In terms of his mood, I think, judging by his performance, I think it goes with, it's changed quite a lot over recent weeks. Sometimes he looks okay, whether it's to do with the change in management or the role he's got. I wouldn't know for sure what's behind it. I think maybe Friday night was just the fact that it was Liverpool and he had his back up straight away. I mean, it was a stupid tackle to get that yellow card so early as well. And I think he was right to be hooked and Everton improve without him. So, I mean, that's not going to help his mood either, to be honest.
And is any more on the Firmino-Holgate racism?
Not at the moment, no. I've been speaking to the FA and the clubs this morning, and the clubs, as we speak at the moment, haven't heard anything from the FA, but are expecting to be contacted maybe over the next 24 hours for their observations, and then we'll take it from there. But certainly nothing to add since confirmation on Saturday that they've received a referee's report, and he has mentioned an incident, and they'll now have to look into it themselves. What baffles me is that, I mean, you know, I wouldn't cover all cases like this, but obviously the referee is mic'd up, but the suggestion is they don't record what is said. And I think in this instance, that would have been quite useful, given how close everyone was to Robert Madeley when this thing did or didn't happen.
And, you know, not just on this issue, you could release a whole series of sort of audio books, couldn't you, of different football matches from the referee's microphone. Quite interesting, isn't it? Andy, thanks for your time.
No problem at all. All
Andy,
the best.
Cheers, man. Andy Hunter, Merseyside correspondent. So Ross Barkley's off to Chelsea, who drew 0-0 at Norwich, which was not a very interesting game of football at all.
So if we could just briefly go back to Everton, I thought it was interesting on Friday night that it's the first bad game I think I've ever seen Jordan Pickford have. He was really poor, and by his own incredibly high standards, not just the rick for the goal, but just overall, the distribution was uncharacteristically poor, dithered a bit when he normally wouldn't, and hopefully it's just a one-off aberration, but, you know, you wonder, is maybe the talk that he's probably going to be England's number one maybe a distraction?
Maybe it's get your mistakes out the way in the FA Cup, like John Stones as well. If we can do them all, then we will definitely win the World Cup, won't we? Onto that, the Chelsea game, not so much the game, which with Chelsea and certainly with Manchester United games, the fun bit is what Conte and Jose are going to say about each other afterwards. As far as I think I've got the timeline right. Jose said, I don't have to be a clown. Conte said, maybe Jose's senile. Jose said, I'm not a match fixer. Conte said, he's a little man. Do we care about this? I think the FA have said, you know, they should probably just be quiet now. Or do we all find this thoroughly entertaining that two grown men are doing this sort of thing?
I am enjoying it immensely. But yeah, it's very unedifying. I think Conte's comment about senile dementia was bang out of order, and he should probably apologise for that. Not necessarily to Jose, but just it's a horrible disease, you know, that affects a lot of people. And, you know, a pal of mine whose mum suffers from it, I made a similar comment once, and he got unbelievably and quite rightfully offended, you know, so I'm aware firsthand of how upset people can get about that. But yeah, it's unedifying, but it's funny.
It's, I don't know, I slightly fear that the whole WWE-ification of football has gone too far. Now, I don't want to sort of be all po-faced and just talk tactics. I think we'd all get bored with that. But I think more people now, or certainly a lot of people now, seem to enjoy that side of it at least as much, maybe more, than the actual game itself. And I wonder whether we need to recalibrate back a little bit. But
I'm to blame because I didn't talk about the football match at all with Chelsea or the Man United game.
Well, in fairness, that way it was a stinker. So I think that's fair enough.
I did notice on Friday that the whole, you know, Merseyside derby, third round of the cup, big game, and the actual game seemed to be a distraction from all the white noise of transfer stuff and managers insulting each other stuff that was going on around it. And
but we can't blame them because we've just done exactly the same thing.
I agree, but I think Sean may have a point that people are more entertained by the nonsense going on off the pitch than they are by the games being played on it.
I mean, you look at it's always been there though.
Yeah, I think it has always been there. But you look at, I don't know, when you look at our traffic, certainly like football rumour stuff, which is often just nonsense, gets huge figures. You look at the transfer window.
Excuse me, Sean. Are you suggesting my rumour mill this morning was nonsense?
But let's see if how history, whether it bears you out or
it
not.
It will judge me kindly.
I mean, I'd be interested to know of our listeners if they're more interested in what Lars had for breakfast and the state of Barry's chair as to the football discussion. I imagine it's, I think it might be the former. I don't know.
I mean, there's a balance. I mean, again, I don't want to come, it'd be boring if we had, three Jonathan Wilsons sat here talking to each other about Chelsea's, right back or the low block. At the same time, I do think...
But if they were discussing their time teaching in a Tibetan monastery? I'd quite enjoy that.
Quite possibly. But again, you've got to, I think, have a happy balance. But when you've got, two of the most successful managers ever arguing over petty stuff like this, I just, I want to roll my eyes and say, come on. And the problem is, it's not just that, it's the supporters now. I think back in the day, most supporters would look like and thought, oh, my manager's being a bit of an idiot. But now on social media, supporters of Manchester United have to stick with, with Jose, or a lot of them do. Similarly, supporters of Chelsea. And actually, why can't we just say, okay, this is knockabout stuff, but we're not going to...
Why can't we all get along?
Why can't we all get along? Yeah. I felt like I want to sort of light a joss stick and start seeing Kumbaya in the office. But I do think it's interesting. Do they feed, because I've seen Miguel Delaney, who's, from the Indy, was talking about this, and people saying, oh, it's the media's fault because we ask the questions. But I don't think it necessarily is. I think it's a mixture of...
Well, you see that same sort of craven one-eyedness in the Mason Holgate Firmino thing, Liverpool fans insisting Firmino didn't say anything racist, Everton fans insisting their man isn't making up. No one knows. That's the fact of the matter. No one knows what was said, so you can't. But people feel compelled because the guy is in their team. They have to stick up for him,
How do you feel about all of this, Jacob?
Well, I think you could go back to Ferguson and Wenger and say this is along those lines, where didn't the FA have to really get involved when they were going at it? I think that the senile dementia line was completely out of order, and I understand why anybody who has been offended by that would be, and I don't really understand the amnesia clarification around it, because Conte said it in Italian, so I'm not sure how there could be a mistranslation, but you have to accept it if that's what they're saying. And then from there, the whole match fixing comment has taken it up a notch. It is interesting because they hate each other so much, and they're managers of the two biggest teams, so it informs the matches, it informs the way they'll approach the games when they come up against each other. Is one of them just going to lose it on the touchline and not be able to manage properly?
Barry is standing there with his fingers crossed.
How is that going to affect the two teams? Ultimately, as well, I think that you'll not notice, you won't see Pep Guardiola getting involved with any of this at the moment, because he doesn't need to. And these are two managers who at the moment are underachieving with their sides and are way off. And really, at the moment, this is the only way they're making themselves relevant.
On the pitch, Manchester United beat Derby 2-0. And we discussed Jesse Lingard a little bit on the last pod. But another lovely goal. And I've seen some people saying, look, if you pick the England team tomorrow, Lingard would get in ahead of Dele Alli.
Maybe.
I wouldn't say that, but I think that's reasonable.
On current form, yeah, of course he would. You'd have to, if you were picking on form.
Sean, you wouldn't?
I would. Last two seasons, since the start of last year, Dele Alli scored, I think, 22 league goals and had 13 assists. And that puts him, in the top 25, I think, across the big five leagues in Europe. We're looking at Lingard and saying, yes, he's had a very good month, but look at it, you've got to, I think, have a broader sweep.
No, I don't have that, Sean. Whatever I saw yesterday.
And also, he has the relationship with Kane, but he hasn't played well this season, Alli. Whereas Lingard's an example of someone who in the last sort of maybe when he came into the side in the last season, people were very, very quick to write him off. Why is Jesse Lingard playing for Manchester United? I don't understand it. I mean, he's a young player who had gone out on loan and sort of struggled to find his way, and he's behind a load of expensive players who automatically got into the side ahead of him, and then he got his chance and he didn't impress necessarily straight away, and people start to get impatient with him. Why? How could Jesse Lingard play for England? There's a reason that he was at Manchester United in the first place, and given a bit of time and patience, for which actually Mourinho doesn't necessarily have the greatest record with young players, maybe deserves a bit of credit for there, is starting to show that he can do it. I think it's another example of needing to bit softer with younger players.
Well, did Mourinho famously say once he just needs 10 minutes to judge whether a player is good enough to be in his team or not?
I think it was maybe even less. Maybe it was like 1 minute. I can't remember. This was in reference to Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who had annoyed him in a friendly and got taken off.
Wow. And he misjudged Kevin De Bruyne. He misjudged Lukaku. He misjudged Mohamed Salah.
No, of course he did. But yeah. I mean, in general, the way that we approach young players, I think, at times, especially the younger English players.
Mm. And actually, Paolo Bandini makes that point that as fans, you watch a player and you make a judgment on him, whether it's brilliant or poor or in the middle. And that's how it stays. We don't have the capacity to think players might improve or get worse.
I think
worse.
That was a Wilson.
No, it was a Bandini. Was it? Oh. Yeah, I think so, yeah. Okay. We've established how boring Jonathan Wilson is already, Gary. I wouldn't remember anything he said. Big upset Stoke at Coventry, or was it a big upset? The end of Mark Hughes. Barry, I think the only thing we're surprised about is how long Mark Hughes kept his job for.
Yeah, I think this is an upset because, you know, Stoke are a Premier League side. They are not playing very well, but Coventry are basically cobbled together on the cheap with bits of string and sticky back plastic, and it's young lads, free transfers.
Do you want to explain to anyone young what sticky back plastic is?
Sellotape, okay. Basically. Mm. And so Stoke should have won that game. And Coventry, you know, we hear about Premier League teams being in crisis, inverted commas. Coventry really are in crisis and have been for a very long time because their owners, a hedge fund group called Sisu, are almost, you know, criminally negligent as far as running their football club.
Sean, do we have to run that by the lawyers, Sean? You're a journalist.
Well, they're certainly negligent.
Yeah. Well, they're very very negligent. Okay, I will retract. They are very negligent. And, you know, it's a disgrace. Because when I was growing up, Coventry's annual fight to stay in the Premier League or the First Division was, you know, an annual thing. And I think Strachan eventually took them down. They won the FA Cup in 1987. That was a huge shock. They beat Spurs, Gary Mabbadon goal and a Keith Houchen diving header. And it's sad to see them in their current state, but this was a great win for them.
Paul says, who do the esteemed panel feel the best manager to save Stoke City from relegation? Gary Rowett or Martin O'Hoofball?
Rowett's done very well and is second in the Championship with Derby, who maybe don't have the long track record of giving managers that much time. So whereas Peter Coates at Stoke has done so with Hughes, kept him for almost 5 years. So although there's a strong chance that he might be going up in May, this could ultimately be a better long-term move for Gary Rowett. I'm not sure about O'Neill, given how his last job in the Premier League ended. I don't know how Barry would feel about him as what he's done exactly at Ireland. With Ireland.
I don't think anyone in Ireland would be particularly sad if he left. He's agreed but not signed a 2-year deal, I think, with Ireland. He's kind of a safe-ish pair of hands, but I'd prefer to see Gary Rowett be given a chance, I think, if I was a Stoke fan.
Tommy asks, what about Hughes to Southampton? Just because Sparky and Saint sounds like a cop show I want to watch. All right, that'll do for part one. Oh, sorry.
Played for Southampton.
He did, didn't he?
Think about that.
I sort of, basically, I know Mark Hughes because he went to Chelsea as well, but I sort of, after he left Man United, I sort of forgotten that's where he was in my mind. I can't imagine him. I can't picture him in any other shirt.
You don't remember the whole Sparky Viali where they were both past their prime and yet they were kind of squabbling over who would lead the line. You don't remember any of that?
Vaguely. No, he's just scoring volleys for Man United. That's all he's doing in my mind. All right, that'll do for part one. In part two, we'll round up the FA Cup and do some other stuff too. Welcome back to part two of Guardian Football Weekly. Well done to Peterborough, who won at Villa, Newport, who beat Leeds. A couple of other things. Wolves nil, Swansea nil. Did anyone see Anthony Taylor's red card for Leroy Fur?
No.
You saw this short.
Yes.
It was marvellous, wasn't it? I mean, it was a terrible decision, but quite entertaining.
It was kind of just a schoolboy trip, really, and he kind of expected a yellow and he got a red.
Yeah, I mean, there was no way it was a straight red card. It was one of those surprised faces that he did when the red came out. Yes, Perry.
There's a good red in the Newport Leeds game as well. I don't know if you saw it. Samuel Sands, the Leeds player, got sent off, and no one seemed quite sure why. And it turned out he'd spat at somebody. And he's since been banned for 6 games.
It's an interesting thing about, you know, if you talk to ex-pros, that spitting is literally the worst thing.
Well, he was accused of it earlier in the season by Port Vale player or Port Vale manager, and there was an investigation. He got away with it, so it probably didn't help him this time round.
Maybe think, like a horse, he's just very salivary. It just kind of flows out when he's running around.
Yeah, but there's a difference between drooling and spitting.
That's why I've lost many girlfriends, isn't it? Actually, neither
that could be interpreted any number of ways. None of them pleasant or good for you.
No, the point I was going to make was this idea that spitting is literally the lowest thing you can ever do. And obviously, it's not very nice to spit at someone. But I mean, given the choice, would you rather be spat at or punched in the face?
Spat.
Yeah, I think it depends how hard the punch is.
I mean,
what about kicked in the swingers? Where would that fall?
Well, that's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, I think as long as they don't have a communicable disease and I've got a flannel, I would be spat at.
A flannel?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, like you get spat at, then you just wash your face and you're fine. If someone punches you, you've got to deal with that. It's more painful. No?
Look, why don't you punch me in the face, Jacob would spit at me, and I'll decide which I liked more.
It's a good one for the video department, if you're willing to.
Well, we should do it on a live show, shouldn't we, least? Notts County won at Brentford. Well done, John Stead. Good for you. Yes, Sean.
That was actually, with bookmakers' odds, the biggest shock the whole weekend. Okay. Yeah, ahead of the Forest and ahead of the Coventrymen.
A lovely goal from John Stead, who must be at least 70 now.
He's destroyed Chelsea two or three years ago
for Bradford.
I remember going to a Spurs Blackburn last game of the season, I reckon, 2005 2006, something like that, and John Stead was up front and very young at the time, and Sparky Hughes was Blackburn's manager, if memory serves, and Hughes every second was turning around going, "That's useless, see," he was just like, you know, kept shaking his head and like he'd never make it, and he's never been particularly good, but he keeps plugging along.
Yeah, better weekend for him than Mark Hughes, wasn't it? Goalless draw for Fleetwood, home to Leicester. Baz, you watched this one, didn't you?
It was not very good.
Okay.
Adrian Silva had his first start for Leicester after his 6 months in bureaucratic limbo after the transfer deadline was missed by 14 seconds.
Did he look any good?
Looked a bit rusty, but yeah, he was all right.
Jamie Vardy was nice. He didn't play. He was told the 87-year-old club vice president, Ted Lowry, was ill at home after a spell in hospital, and he instantly asked for his phone number and called him up to wish him the best, which is nice. And Fleetwood's goalkeeper, Chris Neal, secured a replay, obviously got a clean sheet. As a result, he won a year's supply of pizza from their new sponsors, Papa John's. So well done to you, Chris. How much pizza do we think is a year's supply in your world? I mean,
in my world,
I reckon it's 20 pizzas.
No, Barry, I'm saying, I reckon a couple a week for Barry.
You reckon two a week?
You couldn't be more wrong. I'm not a huge fan of pizza. It's been discussed on this pod before.
I should hope so.
Your predecessor, Jimbo, loves pizza, as does James Horncastle. And I'll eat it, happily eat it, if it's there.
Yeah.
But it would never be my go-to food of choice, sustenance of choice. So a year's supply of pizza for me would probably be, I don't know, less than 5.
Have you had any yet this year?
No.
OK, can you keep count this year for us?
Okay.
Okay, so if there's ever a reason to stay subscribed to the pod, it's the running total of pizzas Barry has eaten.
But now I'm going to feel compelled to, you know.
Are you using that empty sandwich wrapper as Barry's pizza tally? Or are you going to keep that for the whole year?
I absolutely am. It might get a bit smelly. It's a chicken Caesar and cos lettuce. If you're ever in the Guardian canteen, I wouldn't recommend it. It was the mayo. There was something slightly wrong with the mayo. I'll move it on to... sadly, I'm not very good at spreadsheets, as we've already established.
Right.
So do you want to take it on, Jacob, or not?
No, I'd like to actually see you keep that.
Okay, maybe I'll pin it to that. I can pin
that's
it
your,
to
that's
the
your challenge for both of you for okay. the year. Barry's pizza challenge, but you're keeping that.
Barry's pizza challenge.
Well, see who can keep my Carabao box against your sandwich.
That's a real sandwich thing.
Wrapper.
You didn't even bring it in today, and you should have done, because it's the Carabao Cup.
I really bring it in after.
Man City 4, Burnley 1. Just wanted to mention Gundogan's back heel for Aguero, which was lovely. Well done to Wigan, who got a draw at Bournemouth. Shrewsbury 0, West Ham 0, where there was a lad had his tooth knocked out, didn't he?
Josh Cullen.
And he carried on playing, and it looked like he had a lot of lippy on because the blood sort of dried on his lips.
There's a certain amount of relish there, you're just saying that. I mean, sort of bloodlust.
It was one of his front teeth.
It was, yeah.
Afterwards, Mark Noble tweeted him and went, "Mind the gap." Such sympathy. But hats off to him for playing on, because if that had happened to me, I'd just burst into tears and want to crawl into the dressing room and be alone.
I don't want to play if it's raining or if I've got a moderate mouth ulcer.
I was reading a thing over the weekend where Stephen Ireland was discussing this horror leg break, and it was a good story. It's a bit too long to tell in its entirety, but suffice to say, as soon as he broke his leg, Phil Bardsley was standing over him at the training ground, and rather than offering sympathy, had his hands on his head, screaming, "Oh my God, look at it! Oh my God, look at it!"
And actually, Phil Bardsley's pretty tough, isn't he?
And but anyway, to cut a long story short, Stephen Ireland's taken to the hospital, and the guys taking him out of the ambulance are a bit rough with him, and they clattered a stretcher off the ground. And he bit down on his oxygen mask that he was wearing, and one of his teeth came out.
Oh, is that like Homer Simpson?
So then he goes into the hospital, and he's screaming at them, "Go and get my tooth, go and get my tooth." So one of the paramedics went out to find his tooth and came back with a stone. It was not. And Stephen Ireland's basically going, "How can this day get any worse for me?" And then he realised, "Oh God, I'm getting married in 2 weeks. I've got a broken leg and no tooth."
So there we are. Goalless draw for West Ham. We've already mentioned the draw at Spurs, which happened after the pod on Thursday, but they were lovely goals from Aubameyang and Son, weren't they? Spurs beat Wimbledon 3-0, 2 for Harry Kane. And Jan Vertonghen's first goal since 2013, I think. Well, that'll do for part two. In part three, we'll round up Europe, take some of your questions, feedback corner. I'll be back in a tick. Welcome back to part three of Guardian Football Weekly. We're not talking to Sid today because he is dealing with the unveiling of Philippe Coutinho right now. So we'll chat to him on Thursday about that, see if Coutinho could do more kick-ups than Paulinho. In Spain, Barcelona won 3-0 over Levante. Ousmane Dembele was back. Alba and Messi combined beautifully for the first, and Messi's ridiculously quick feet assisted the third goal. They don't play another team in the top four until they face Atletico on the weekend of the 3rd of March, so they'll win all those games and win La Liga by then. Diego Costa started his first home game for Atletico Madrid since he came back, scored a tap-in, and was sent off for celebrating with the fans, dived into the fans, may have forgotten that he'd already been booked, got a yellow card, got sent off, and looked very confused about it in the Seville derby. Real Betis had to take the lead three times, but eventually beat Sevilla 5-3. And Real Madrid drew 2-2 at Celta Vigo. The first goal, if you're going to YouTube anything after this pod, is a lovely chip from Daniel Vaz. 2 goals in 2 minutes for Gareth Bale, whose hair is getting incredibly long at the moment. Almost looks like he's got hair extensions. But that wasn't enough. They drew 2-2. And that's Spain. Before we round out the rest of Europe, Carabao Cup action this week. Manchester City, Bristol City, Chelsea, Arsenal. Barry, you haven't bought the Carabao box. Will you bring it on Thursday?
Of course. Although, you see, it's traditional to bring it after the games are finished, but these are two-legged semi-finals, so it's... I'll bring it. Okay. We can decide on Thursday. This is, think about it, mull it over and see what you want.
Okay, fine. Presumably, no one thinks Bristol City can get past Manchester City in two legs. But it'd be a nice experience for them. I've written them off there, so if you're angry and you're a Bristol City fan, apologies. Chelsea-Arsenal, because it was such a good game in the Premier League, it just depends what sides they put out, doesn't it?
You'd imagine that Wenger has to put out a strong side now after Sunday. Having rested all those players, they don't play again until Sunday after that against away to Bournemouth, so you'd think that they have enough time to recover. This is now... Over the last couple of seasons, it's been a cup that's kind of rescued it, but given it a better look, better feel to what's going on, especially last year. So if they can get past Chelsea, then every chance that they could win it. And they've actually not done too badly against them in the last few meetings. I think they've met three or four times since the defeat in February. So Arsenal will be written off by quite a few people, but they have a chance here.
Barry, Italy. You've been doing your research on Italy, as we've heard already today, so we're expecting big things.
Yeah, well, big news. Benevento won their second consecutive match.
Marvellous.
They beat Sampdoria 3-2. There are mutterings about maybe can they possibly stay up? Crotone stayed up last year, having been in a worse position at this stage than Benevento were. I think they had 1 point fewer. Other news, not so heartwarming. Blaise Matuidi was playing for Juventus against Cagliari and made allegations that he was racially abused. Cagliari fans have previous for this. And Matuidi went on Facebook and said, "Today I experienced racism during the match. Weak people try to intimidate with hate. I'm not a hater and can only be sorry for those who set bad examples. Football is a way to spread equality, passion and inspiration, and this is what I'm here for. Peace." I think when Sully Montari was a Pescara player, he was also racially abused against Cagliari. So that's not so nice to see. Elsewhere, Milan continued their decent form with a win over Crotone, and the table is basically Napoli still at the top, 1 point clear of Juve, and Inter third, 8 points behind.
In France, they had the Coup de France, the biggest shock being Bordeaux losing to, I would like to call it Danny Granville, but it Granville, I imagine, who are currently 11th in a regional fourth division. So 11th in League 2 in Newport County, for example. PSG smashed Rennes 6-1. Mbappe, Neymar and Di Maria all got two. No Bundesliga, that's back this weekend. But Lucas Podolski was back in Cologne opening a kebab shop. He now plays for Vissel Kobe in the J-League. Kebab shop had a queue of at least 1,000 people.
Sorry, is he opening his own kebab shop or just cutting the ribbon on someone else?
He's opening his own kebab shop. Are you on your phone, Sean? Are you
yes,
sure?
Yes, you were.
Okay. I like the fact you can say yes, John. It's like you won't get in trouble. You'll be welcome back. That was the little, that was the clicking you heard. Hopefully this stays in the edit.
Sorry.
That's okay. The kebab shop had a queue of at least 1,000 people. Some queued for over 5 hours for one of Podolski's doners, by which time the doner would have gone that weird, you know, when a doner looks really old, when it's been going round the spit for a long time, and it's gone a bit orange. You know, hopefully they were slicing it off regularly.
Can you imagine being like really drunk at 3 o'clock in the morning, lurching into a kebab shop, and Lucas Podolski's behind the counter cutting bits of meat off an elephant's leg?
What's your kebab of choice, everybody?
Oh, I eat even fewer kebabs than pizzas. I'd say I've had two in my entire life.
How are you so unhealthy?
Because I smoke and drink too much.
Ah, okay. Anyone else?
I've never had a kebab.
Ever?
Ever. I'm vegetarian, so...
Okay, okay, that makes sense. Have you, I mean, but in a kebab shop, would you just get a pita and salad?
I don't think I've ever been in one.
You've
maybe.
Never been in one?
God, that's I'm, so Guardian.
I go to the shop around the corner that does quinoa and, you know, organic sprouted...
Sean, he gets a pita bread full of halloumi.
Well, you can get that at a kebab. That's what I thought he'd be his kebab shop thing of choice. Maybe try one. Try a kebab shop. Not a kebab. You can. I don't want to. I'm not like the Carlisle chairman. Did you see this? Who went to Forest Green and said I couldn't eat the vegan food. He sort of turned down the vegan food and said, "What would happen if I served an all meat platter to the Forest Green chairman?"
That'd be really offensive.
It would be. Yes.
Yeah.
Your kebab of choice, Jacob?
But like a nice kebab.
You can have whatever type of kebab.
So like in a good place, a lamb doner.
Okay.
Yeah, but not one of those ones. That's
not
really
a dirty.
Oh no, I've had nice kebabs. I assumed you were talking about like
no,
dirty.
I'm talking
4 o'clock in the morning. No. You're
you
drunk.
You must have had
kebab.
A time when you were a dirty.
We've been a student, but yeah. didn't like them.
Really? So.
What about you, Max? I can imagine.
My student days, I was a chips, cheese, doner, meat, burger, sauce man. I probably had
disgusting.
Chips, cheese,
all in one,
doner, meat, salads, burger, sauce. I probably had at least two a week.
Ooh, at what time?
Breakfast. Oh yeah, no. Don't be ridiculous. After dinner, yeah, post pub, just coming out of Park End nightclub at 2 a.m. And I didn't like the nightclubs. They're very noisy places. Not for me.
How did you feel when you finished the kebab? It's like self-loathing.
During, absolutely joyous. The next morning, really sad about it. Here's some questions as we go into Feedback Corner and questions. This is from TNE Mebo. It says, do you think Ryan Babel can replace Sanchez at Arsenal? Thanks for that one. NJW says, which ground have you been to that had the most tasty halftime food? Not including boxes, because I'm not connected enough for that.
The Dripping Pan, Lewis FC, to do these lovely organic burgers.
We've got to try and sound a bit more man of the people than the last 10 minutes. Jacob? I don't eat a football.
No,
right?
I don't eat at football.
Reading, when they were sponsored by Waitrose, was an absolute joy to visit. How does that sit with your man of the people credentials?
That's much better. Finbar says, does anyone else prefer slightly stale, one-day-old, say, poppadoms to fresh ones? And what's your favourite accompaniment? No. I actually have a real issue with poppadoms as well, because it's like having a bag of crisps before a roast dinner. Like, they're lovely, and I want them, but I would rather just not have any.
But when you're having your first or second or third Cobra, surely you want a little something to munch while you wait for the curry to be heated in the microwave and to be served.
Yes, but if you can just wait, you enjoy your curry much more. On double-barreled name footballers, we sort of threw it at you. On
James Ward-Prowse scored his first goal of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Justin says, former early 80s Southampton legend, Forbes Phillipson Masters. Surely a shoe-in for the double-barreled 11. John says, Leo Fortune West is a name that immediately sprung to mind. A journeyman striker who played for every team in the lower half of the football pyramid. I need to get this one in from these sad captains. Shane Cansdale-Sheriff, an Aussie footballer who played for various football league clubs and also in the Danish Superliga for 3 seasons. And PJot said Gifton Noel Williams, which is nice. Corpus has a question for you, Barry. Would you like to manage this team I created? These are the most unpredictable players I could think of that could form a team. Higuita, Pius, Luis, Puyol, Pepe, Joey Barton, Gascoigne, Dibriel Cisse, Vinny Jones, Eric Cantona, Mario Balotelli.
Who'd be getting the fines they have to pay? If they've gone into my pocket, I'll manage them.
Joseph says, is Max Rushton a Man United supporter? He sounds as depressed as Martin Tyler does when talking about Liverpool winning. No. And to finish off, Taxman Cometh says, quick question, what will be the hashtag for the Tottenham-Watford game? Will it be to twat? Totwat? I mean, I guess it will, won't it? It depends how you say it. I think maybe you were hoping for a bigger laugh than it received on this pod. I read it out for you anyway. So look, that'll do for today. Thanks, Barry.
Hey, you're welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. Lovely to have you back.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome anytime. Jacob, thank you.
Thank you.
See you all on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.